Good afternoon, everyone. For those who weren't at my session yesterday, my name's Kevin Filch. I work in Redmond at Microsoft on the C# team. I've worked there for 14 years. I've spent all of that time working on kind of the C# IDE, features like IntelliSense, refactoring, completion, all that stuff is what I worked on when I was an individual contributor. And for the last 9 years or so, I've been the lead of the team that's responsible for that. I also dabble with the language design team a little bit, which was part of my talk yesterday. Today we're going to focus more on Visual Studio itself. I have a build of a preview version of Visual Studio 15, codename 15. You guys can't quite get the version that I have yet, but you should be able to really soon. So in a few days, you should be able to download and try all of the stuff that I'm going to talk about. I only have about 5 slides, and they go right at the end, and they're just to recap kind of what we talked about so people know about it. I'm going to spend the whole rest of the time in Visual Studio going through, showing some of the features, how they work, how they fit together. I will try to hold it to 1:30 because I know people are getting hungry for lunch. Yesterday I didn't do so well and I went a little bit over. If I do again, I apologize. I am quite happy to stay and answer questions during lunch here, or if people want to move out into the hallway, I'm free to answer questions whenever. So with that, I'll get started. Just one more thing before I do. Feel free to shout out any questions. If you have any along the way, I can take a minute to explain a little bit more about anything that I might be showing. Make sure you shout loud. The lights are bright and I can't always see very well, so if you just put up your hand, I may not see you. But go ahead and shout it out there. So with that, we'll go to my first of 5 slides, which just says that we're going to do demos. So moving along, let's go over here and look at Visual Studio. So this is, like I said, the new Visual Studio 15 preview. I obviously have it installed and running here, but the first thing that I want to talk about is the new install experience for Visual Studio. And so if I look at the installer here, so it installs an installer, which seems a little bit strange, but one of the reasons why it does that is because one of the things that we're working on with Visual Studio setup is to make it more standalone and have less of an impact to the system. So the idea is that there are some SDKs and that sort of thing that are installed system-wide, but all of Visual Studio itself should install into a single folder without writing to the registry or anything like that. And one of the reasons why we want to do that is we want to allow you to install multiple Visual Studios side by side. Maybe one is a preview of some upcoming technology from a team, and you're not quite willing to use that on a day-to-day basis, we want to let you install that on your same machine right beside your existing one. Now, some of you may be saying, wait a second, install 2 Visual Studios on my computer. Visual Studio is already huge, and it takes forever to install. Why do you want to do this? Well, one of the other things that's really interesting here is that we have this idea of different workloads, and that didn't work very well. Let me try launching this again. This is, like I said, these are preview bits, so we might see some unexpected stuff happen. But if I click on modify, we'll try it one more time, I should get a list of different, what we call workloads. And so workloads are things like, I want to do development for Universal Windows Platform, or I want to build WPF apps, or that sort of thing. And you can kind of pick and choose which ones of these you want to have installed. And so we've factored Visual Studio into a much smaller installable thing. You can't see it right now. What I currently have installed is Visual Studio for desktop development and for Visual Studio extension development. All told, that install is currently about 1.25 gigabytes. So it's way down from the minimum of 6 gigabytes or whatever that VS was in the past. And we've also worked on, like I said, because we just dump files into a directory most of the time, setup is a lot faster. With the builds that we're seeing realistic times on the internet of around 15 minutes to install Visual Studio coming back from our telemetry. In my slides, I have a link to a YouTube video where somebody does it on campus with the bits right close by so they don't have to be downloaded, and picking just the core editor workload without any C# support or anything like that, it's about 400 megabytes, and it installs in about 2 minutes. So we're really working on making VS setup a more pleasant experience. All right, that's probably way too long to spend talking about setup. So let's jump in and talk about some code for a bit. So I'm going to open here a project. Wow. Start page apparently doesn't work in low resolution things. I'm going to open a project that I have up on my GitHub. It's a little unit test runner for running XUnit tests. So first thing I'll do is just run it so you can get an idea of what it looks like. It's not all that exciting. So it's just a little unit test runner. I can do things like open assemblies, and it'll show me the set of tests that it can run, and I can click run, and it'll run the tests, and that sort of thing. So that's the kind of the application that we're working in today that is provides sort of context. So the first thing that I want to do in this is just get started. I want to take a look at what the main view model looks like. So I'm going to go ahead and hit Control T, and this brings up our new go-to experience. For those of you who've used Visual Studio in the past, this is what we called Navigate To. It was bound to Control Comma. Control Comma still works, but we renamed it to go-to, and we put it on the much more simple to remember shortcut, Control T. The other thing that we've done is we've added these filters along the bottom. So I can say, well, let me find only types. And all that does is put a T space at the beginning of the list. So if I don't want to do that, I can just, if I don't want to use the mouse to click this, I can just hit T space. And then I can type something like MVM, and it'll match main view model. I can also type something like main, I should be able to, type something like, with a typo, I don't know if you can see up there, but I actually typed it M-I-A-N. So we've built a fuzzy matching, spell checking kind of algorithm into this. So even if you make a slight typo as you're going, hopefully we should be able to match the results anyways. So I'm going to go ahead and navigate there. And I get this file. It's kind of a lot going on. One of the first things that I do when I get into a code base is I just want to take a little bit of a look around. And so this test util thing is sticking out at me. I don't really understand what that is. It's not a very great name. So one of the first things that I'm going to do is just invoke peak definition. So I'm going to use Alt F12. And what that does, Alt F12. What that does is that just pops open a little editor view directly in line so I can get an idea of what that file is about. I can do further peak definitions directly in there. And it just opens them, and it opens a little stack here. So I can go back through the things that I've looked at just to get an idea of what this thing might look like. Escape will make that go away. So that showed me kind of what iTestUtil is. But I'm not really interested in what it is. I'm interested in who implements it. It's an interface, right? So one of the things that we finally added, and this exists today in VS 2015 Update 2, is I can use Control F12 to do go to implementation. And in this case, there's multiple parts of the thing that implements it, so it pops up a list at the bottom with those different parts. I can pick one, double click on it, and I'm taken directly to the implementation. If there's only one implementation, then it doesn't even pop up that window at the bottom. It just goes straight there. So Control F12 is really a handy thing. Going back into the go-to experience, one of the things that we've added down here is the idea to search only in the current document instead of looking across the whole solution. So I can click that, and maybe I'm looking for something like start worker process. So now I go there. I don't see a lot of results from everywhere else that I may not care about. I just find the ones from the current file. So here, the next thing to kind of get into is looking at code like this one, this line right here. I have a string.format call. For those of you that came to my talk yesterday, one of the things that we talked about was with interpolated strings and how you can kind of get away from using string.format with these hard to remember replacement numbers and where they map to and that sort of thing. So we've added refactoring in VS 15 that allows me to do that automatically. Now, refactorings can be kind of hard to discover right now. We're thinking about changing them. So the thing that I want you to remember is control dot. Whenever you think the IDE should be able to help you with something, there's something you want to do, try hitting control dot and see if it can help you with something. So I'm going to go ahead and hit control dot, and there's an option there that will just convert this string.format call into an interpolated string. And you can see the little preview of what it's going to do. If I hit enter, it'll go ahead and make that change for me, right in line. So this is a tiny little thing, but it just is something that saves me a few seconds whenever I run across it. It helps me use the new language features. One more note on control dot. Control dot has been the shortcut for light bulbs and smart tags all the way back to VS 2005. So it's still our kind of main shortcut there. For people who are ReSharper users who want to give VS a try without ReSharper, we now bind Alt-Enter to our light bulbs as well as kind of a secondary shortcut, so you can go ahead and just use Alt-Enter if you're more used to using that one. All right, so we converted this to an interpolated string. I'm going to go back to the main view model, and the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to use Control minus to just navigate through the back stack. And so just like in a browser, you have a forward-back navigation stack, I have these buttons up here that are forward and back. Back is bound to control minus, so I can just go back to where I was with control minus. So this time, I'm going to use go to definition instead of go to implementation, although they should work identically in this case. I'm going to hit F12, and we're going to go look at this settings class. So we've got a settings class. The first thing I see in it is that there's a settings file name of settings.xml, and XML seems so last decade. So let's go ahead and change this to settings.json. And that's what we'll spend some time during this demo doing. We'll convert the settings file into JSON. So the next thing I want to look at is, where does this thing get used? Presumably it gets read from and written from somewhere. So I'm going to invoke find all references using shift F12. So I don't know how many of you have noticed a theme, but we've kind of tied a whole bunch of our definition and reference-based navigation commands to F12. So we have F12 for go to definition, control F12 for go to implementation, alt F12 for peak definition, and shift F12 for find all references. So if you're looking for something about the symbol that you're on, F12 and some combination of modifiers is probably what you want, if you don't want to remember all of those. But anyway, so shift F12 lets me do find all references. So this is a new find all references experience that we've built for VS 2015. One of the things you can see is that it's got kind of great coloring that looks exactly like it looks in the editor. If I want to get a little bit more context about kind of where this is used, I can hover over it and it gives me a great pop-up window that's actually the exact text of the file, exactly the way it would be colored if I was there in the editor. It's also hierarchical. In this particular example, there's only one definition and it's only referenced in one project, but I can actually do grouping and hierarchies, and so here I've got it set to a custom grouping, but I can group by various things, or I can right-click in here and choose what I want to group by, and the kind of the order that I check them is the order that the hierarchy appears. And then one last thing to mention in here that's kind of great is this little lock icon. And so just to demonstrate what that does is if I click the lock icon and then I do a find all references for this recent assembly's name with shift F12, well now I have two find all references results windows. They went to an ugly spot, but you can see I have find all references 1 and find all references 2. And so maybe I'm like still working through one big list of things, but I want to just quickly look at something without losing the context of that original thing. I can go ahead and lock the results of the big thing that I'm working on. So I'll dismiss this tool window. Shift escape closes tool windows if you don't want them anymore. So shift escape makes that go away. So I have this list of settings, places where the settings file name is used. Here's the definition for it. It's used here. Let me pin this so that we can see a little better. By the way, another tip, any tool window in Visual Studio that has a list in it, like the error list or the to-do list or this find references list or the find symbol results list or any of those, if you want to cycle through those results, you can press F8 to go to the next one and shift F8 to go to the previous one, and it just picks whatever the last active tool window was and goes to the next thing in that last active tool windows list. So even if I'm here in the editor, F8 will take me to the next one. So it looks like I have two references. One is here in this method save, and F8 to the next one is here in the method load. So it looks like there's only two places where I use this settings file name, when I load it and when I save it. Great. Let's go ahead and change those to use JSON. So the next thing to look at, the first thing it does is it opens an XML file. Well, do we use this anywhere else? Let's go to definition on it. We have some code. It looks like we can probably copy this code and make it do JSON instead. But I don't know if I can just get rid of this. Is it used anywhere else? So I'll again quickly do a go to definition or a find all references with shift F12. And it turns out that it is used in another place. We have some window layout. Whoops. Let me dock this down here. We have some window layout persistent stuff that uses it as well. So let's go ahead and use every programmer's favorite tool in their toolbox. We'll copy and paste this method. And we'll make a new method that returns a JSON text reader, and we'll call it open JSON file. So you can see here that the compiler is telling me that I have a problem. The type of JSON text reader didn't turn teal the way I would expect it to. But you can see that there's also a light bulb over here saying maybe I can help you with that. So if I hit Control Dot again, like I said, to show you the text reader, it will offer to let me generate the type. I was hoping it was going to do something a little bit better, so let me change my example a little bit. So I'll spell it this way instead. And if I hit Control Dot this time, you can see that same spell checking taking into account. But this time we're going to offer to add a NuGet package from NuGet.org and add the using to it and fix the spelling of it so that it's the type that I was looking for. So I can go ahead and hit enter here. Takes a second. Hopefully the network works for me. But now I've gone ahead and fixed the spelling. I typed the case wrong. I've added the using. And if I come over here to Solution Explorer, we've added a packages.config with, well, we already had a packages.config, but we've added newtonsoft.json into that packages.config and added the reference. How does that work? What are we doing in that case? We actually have an index that we download from NuGet.org, well, not directly from NuGet.org, but we download an index from Microsoft that has the top, I forget how many, 10,000, something like that, packages based on download count and the names of every type that exists inside of those 10,000 packages. So we download that. We update it once a day using a diff algorithm to just download what's changed since the last day. And then we consult that dictionary. So we're not going and hitting NuGet to ask about every type name in your file all the time. Once a day, we download this little changed set of types. And we use that. So that's so now we've got that. Let's close this file and come back over here, and we'll see if we can fix this thing up. So we have open JSON file. We get storage. We open an XML. We open a file stream, and we open an XML text reader. Well, let's do a JSON text reader, and I still can't spell. But you can see that down here we now have. That same fuzzy matching spell checking algorithm happens here. I can just go ahead and ask it to fix it for me. So if I get the casing wrong or make small spelling mistakes, the IDE kind of knows what's going on there. I happen to know that we need a stream reader here because JSON doesn't provide one. So we've got that. And then whitespace handling, we don't really have that as a problem with JSON, so we'll just go ahead and get rid of that line. All right, so now we've got open JSON file. It looks like we need create JSON file as well. So let's go ahead and copy and paste this method and do the same kind of thing there. So in this case, we want to have a JSON text writer, and we'll call it create JSON file. And here we'll do JSON. Oops. For those of you who are following along and not quite understanding what's happening on the keyboard, the reason why my cursor goes wide like that sometimes is I use a Vim emulation extension that's written by a friend of mine at Microsoft, and so I'm using Vim key bindings to do some of the typing that I'm doing here. So same thing like in the reader, we have to make a stream writer. We don't have to worry about encoding for JSON. And so now I have these two errors, formatting.indented. Not sure what's going on there, but there's a light bulb, so let's see what the IDE says. The IDE says there's two things that are called formatting. One comes from XML and one comes from JSON. Now that I have the usings for both, the compiler doesn't know which one it is, but I can go ahead and make them be fully qualified. So in the XML one, we'll pick the XML formatting, and in the JSON one, we'll pick the JSON formatting. And all the errors go away. So we now have the ability to open a JSON file for reading and to create a JSON file. But that wasn't really what we wanted to do. We wanted to fix the load and save methods over here. So we can go ahead and do the same thing, same kind of steps over here. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to rename XML file into JSON file. And so I do that by hitting F2, just like the standard Windows shortcut for rename. And this brings up kind of our new inline rename experience that we added in VS 2015. So you can see that I have this little, not very little on this screen, but I have a dashboard in the top right that tells me some information about the rename that's happening, gives me some options. But kind of all of the references to it are highlighted in green directly in the file. And I can go ahead and type something else. Let's type something strange for a second. And you can see they kind of all update live. I can keep going. And if I type a name that conflicts with an existing name, then it'll go ahead and say, hey, this isn't going to work. This is going to introduce some problems. You are typing a name. That name already has a meaning, and I can't do anything about it. And so this is kind of a great way to let you know that something could go wrong. We don't prevent you from doing it, so the apply button is still enabled. If I hit OK, it'll still go ahead and do that. That's because we realize that sometimes you guys are smarter than us, and maybe you have a plan, maybe you're trying to get somewhere, and you're OK with doing this because you're going to delete the other one as the next thing you do. We don't want to stop you from doing that, but we want to make the information available to you in kind of an ambient fashion so you can get a sense of what's going on. I don't really want to call this settings, though. I want to call it a JSON file, like the XML file before it. We don't have a concept of EOF there. We don't have a concept of moving to content. So we'll just get rid of those. And we'll call this thing JSON as well. And we'll make it be jObject.load instead. Here again, this is a new file. I haven't added the using yet, but I can control dot and have the IDE either insert the using for me, or I can decide to fully qualify it. So I will go ahead and insert the using. And oh, this still calls OpenXML file. We probably want to change this to OpenJSON file instead. All right. So at this point, what do we actually have in this settings file? It looks like the only thing that we have is a list of recent assemblies to populate that recent assemblies list. So instead of using element, we'll use a value of type jArray with this name. And if it's not null, then we'll fill up our settings object with it. Next thing, I don't know how well you can see it on that screen up there, But when I changed this line of code, this string got kind of faded out. And a light bulb popped up on this line when I put the cursor there. That's because we've actually detected already that that cast has no effect. The type of that thing is already string. So you don't need to have that cast in your code. And I can just go ahead and hit enter, and we'll clean it up for you. So that demonstrates kind of loading the file. We can do saving as well. It's pretty much the same process. So let's see, what time is it? Let's skip that, because there's some other stuff that I want to show you. So we'll assume that you could do the same thing with saving the file. Looking at my script. All right, so the next thing is to look at some different stuff. So I'm going to move into a different file, again, using that goto. So I'm going to control T. I'm going to use M to say I want to go to a member. And then I'm going to say on call changed. Wow. On collection changed. Oh, I'm set to current file still. Thank you. I wasn't expecting this to stay persisted. All right, so I'm going to go to on collection changed in this other file. And again, you see kind of that code fading out there where we're raising this event. How many of you have seen a pattern like this for raising events before where you assign the thing into a local and you check if the local is null? And it's kind of a lot of boilerplate code. And for years, the language design team was asked, well, couldn't you just have a way to invoke events? And VB has this. There's a raise keyword that you can use in VB that does all this for you. Well, it turns out that we kind of accidentally did this when we did the null conditional operator in C# 6. And so we built some IDE support to let you know that you can do this. But if we detect this pattern in your code, we fade it out, we pop up the light bulb, and if I hit control dot, it says this can be simplified. And it can be simplified by doing a question mark dot expression and then calling the invoke method on the delegate. That question mark dot already does the null check, and in fact it already creates the local for you because it doesn't want to evaluate the result of the expression twice, and so you get all of the thread safety and everything with a lot less code. So that's kind of just a handy little thing that we've built in to help you, again, discover things that you can do with new versions of the language. So keeping on with this idea of just kind of keeping an eye out for what the IDE can help me with, as I kind of scroll down in through this file, I notice that there's a light bulb all the time as I'm walking through here. And so let me just hit control dot and see what's there. Well, it turns out that we've detected that you're switching on an enum in this case, and you haven't looked at all of the different values of that enum. There's two of them that you're ignoring. Now, the compiler can't tell you about this because it's perfectly fine. You might know for some reason that you're never going to get one of those two values. But maybe you want to be a little bit paranoid. Maybe you want to, just in case, you want to handle all the values. So we'll now detect that you have a switch where you're missing some of those cases, and we'll go ahead and offer to insert them for you. So I can go ahead and do that, and I don't really know what's going to happen here, so let's just throw a not supported exception and say we don't know how to handle that. One thing you can see here, and we don't need a break anymore, is this weird pragma. So what is this weird pragma about? So pragma warning is something that's existed in the language for a long time. It lets you silence a compiler warning for a particular region of the code. In this case, I'm silencing something called the IDE 007, 007. Why am I doing that? Well, I'm doing that because there's a bug in the build that that I have on my machine, so the IDE is reporting diagnostics that it shouldn't be. But it does make me think, well, what else is the IDE telling me about? Where else can I find some of this stuff about? Find out some of this stuff. And so I wanted to pop open the error list over here. And if I go ahead and look at this, we have a whole bunch of these messages in the error list that are coming from the IDE. So some of them are things like, my naming styles don't match what I expect them to be. It turns out I have a coding style where I tend to put underscores at the beginning of field names. And this class, this filtered collection view class that I'm in right now, that's some code I borrowed from the internet. And so it doesn't really follow my style. And so these warnings show up. And so what can I do about that? Well, once again, you see the light bulb up there in the margin. I can go ahead and control dot, and there's an offer to fix that. It'll rename it to have an underscore just the way that I want it to. Now, you guys might be saying, well, this is great, but I hate underscores. I never want to have underscores in my code, because I know this is kind of a religious thing. Well, so you can see down here at the bottom, there's this idea, there's this button, and this is obviously some developer UI here. This is not what the final UI will look like. But we have this button that says change style options. And that takes me into tools options. And in tools options, I can create and configure a whole bunch of rules. And I do that, so these are our naming rules. There's a set of naming rules. I can build up, well, this is based on matching things that are private fields, and so I have to match, like, I can define what I want to trigger the rule on, and then I can define, well, what do I want the rule to be? I can require prefixes or require suffixes, change capitalization rules, all that kind of thing. And then I can say, what's my enforcement level? Do I want it to be an error, a warning, a suggestion? Do I want to never see it? Do I not care? So maybe I don't care, I can switch it to none. So shipping out of the box, we don't put any of these naming rules in right now. These are ones that I've configured myself. But I just wanted to give you an idea that this is kind of available there. What else is over here? Within code style, we've kind of moved the formatting page down into there. But there's also these general style options. So these are some of the things, and it looks like this remembered my size from before. I connected to the projector. But there's other things that we can provide suggestions about. So maybe you don't like underscores, but you do like to refer to all your fields with this dot. Well, you can say, yes, I want to have this dot, or no, I don't want to have this dot, and make it an error if I don't have this dot somewhere. Stop the build from working. Like, I care about it so much that I just want it to be an error. Or you can say, don't bother me about it at all, never tell me about it, but when you do a refactoring like extract method or introduce local or inline temporary variable or any of those things, what style should the IDE use to generate that code? So we still will look at the value of the left column when we're generating code, even if we're not going to try to get you to enforce it in the code after it's been written. So you might want to spend some time setting this up the kind of the way that you want it to be. While we're in tools options, I wanted to show you a couple other things. How am I doing on time? Not bad. So if I can get, I can't. Back over here on the left-hand side, a few things that I wanted to show you. On the advanced tab under C#, one of my favorite options that we turned off by default, sadly, is this enable full solution analysis. And so what this does is it will go ahead and ask the compiler to find all of the compiler errors, but also all of the analyzers, all of the style rules, all of that sort of stuff on every file in my solution. We turned it off because that can take up some CPU and some memory, and some big customers were saying that they didn't like that. So depending on the size of your project, you may or may not want to have this enabled. We're working on making it scale a lot better, and so hopefully at some point we'll be able to turn it back on. I work on Roslyn.sln most of the time. It's a project that's got a couple million lines of code and a solution that has 160 projects or so. And I have this on all the time when I'm on my desktop at work that has 8 cores and 32 gigs of RAM. When I'm on my laptop, I turn it off so that it saves my battery a little bit. So that's kind of when you might use it or not use it. If you have it unchecked, then we only run that analysis on the files that you have open in the editor. If you have it checked, we run it on all of the files, whether they're open or not. I totally forgot about this little feature down here, so we'll maybe see if we can sneak it in. The other thing I wanted to talk about was up here. In order to get those suggestions to use NuGet packages, because we're downloading stuff from the internet and we're maybe changing your project and a bunch of that stuff, you have to go into Tools Options and you have to say, yes, you want us to suggest types from NuGet. We can also suggest types from reference assemblies. We can add project-to-project references to other projects in your solution if you name a type from there. But you kind of have to come here and enable these options to do that. So spend some time here in Tools Options. Anything else I wanted to show in here? Last one, IntelliSense. These are kind of new options. They're on by default. I'll show you what they look like in a second. This highlight matching portions and show completion item filters. They're kind of great features that are turned on by default. We included options just for some people who may not like the visual UI. So let me get out of Tools Options and show you what a couple of these things are. So the first one, over here back on style, I had a bunch of things configured to be suggestions. Well, what does that mean? Well, you've already seen that it shows up down here in the error list as a message. The other thing, and I'm going to zoom in really big to see if you can see it. Unfortunately, the color is very faint in this preview. We fixed it like the day after we snapped the branch. But you can see a faint dotted line under data source there, those four little dots. So those tell you directly when you're in the editor, hey, the IDE has a suggestion here. If you put your caret there, you'll probably get a light bulb and you'll be able to fix it. Like I said, I realized that it's like impossibly hard to see in this build. In the next build, it's a darker color by default, and there's a Tools Options entry so you can change it to be a different color. Usually when I'm in the office and I have the newer builds, I set it to be magenta, so it's kind of hot pink, and I can see them right away, and I kind of really like working that way. So that's suggestions. Next thing I wanted to show you was completion filtering and bolding, that last option that I did. So let's go over here to a place where we can demo that pretty well. So let's go into main window. And we'll zoom back out to a regular size. So let's say here that I wanted to do some mouse processing. So I can type this dot, and I get this giant list because I am in a WPF window, and there's a bajillion methods, and there's a bajillion events, and there's a bajillion properties, and I don't know what I'm looking for. Well, one thing I can do is we've added these little buttons at the bottom, and so those will filter to just those specific things. So in this completion list right now, there are properties, events, fields, and methods. And so if I click on events, or use Alt-E for events, then suddenly I see just the events, right? That's pretty handy. We've had filtering of completion lists as I type, but one thing that you can see now is we bold what parts of it match. So if I start doing a camel case type match, like maybe I want to handle something like a mouse button down, right? You can see these are the items that are left in the list, and the parts of what I've typed that match are bolded, so you can see why they're still in the list. So these are those two little options that I mentioned kind of in the Tools Options. They're on by default. If you really hate the bolding or you don't want to take up the space to have these filter buttons, you can turn them off, but I would suggest leaving them on. Those are kind of all of the main IDE features that I wanted to show. I have 3 minutes left. So I'm going to flip back over to slides and go through a little bit of a recap of some of that stuff and then have some time for questions. So first of all, new acquisition experience. This is the tweet I was talking about. It's a link to a YouTube video. It's the most boring YouTube video ever. It just is the progress bar of a Visual Studio install. But it takes 2 minutes and 20 seconds to install Visual Studio from start to finish. So it's pretty impressive. Tim's one of the PMs who works on Visual Studio setup. Two other things I didn't talk about here. because they should hopefully be mostly invisible to you. Deferred project load, we're trying to do some work so that when you first open a solution, all we do is kind of paint the solution tree, and then we only load projects when you start to do something from that project. And so we'll do some work to build up indexes in the background so that features should work the way that you expect them to. But what it should really result in is a faster solution load overall. So if I go back into Tools Options, I'll just enable it and demo that quickly. So if I go and check this lightweight solution load experimental, it's off by default right now. It is experimental. There are bugs. I'm pretty sure VS is going to crash after about 2 minutes after I do this. But I know why. I'm going to open Roslyn.sln, which is kind of a giant solution. I encourage you to try this and let us know where it works, where it doesn't work, and upload crash reports if you run into them so that we can fix them. But if I open Roslyn here, like I said, Roslyn has like 160 projects. It tends to take a little while to open, but not anymore. We've actually opened all that whole solution already in the background. Now in the background, we're building an index to populate IntelliSense and all that stuff, and so that's not quite done yet, but I can already do things like hit Control T and find visual, or I can't, because the index isn't built for that yet. But that's the idea, is that you'll be able to go ahead and find the index, use the index, start navigating, and it's not until I actually like do something with the project directly in Solution Explorer that it will really load that project. So that's deferred project load. The last one, we're moving around where code runs in processes. This should be an invisible change to you. The main goal of this is things like our analyzers and CodeLens and stuff like that, we want to get them out of the devems.exe process because it's a 32-bit process and we run out of address space sometimes and crash. So we want to get rid of that. Move it into a separate process. That other process, we can use more cores, we can allocate more memory, and so we can do stuff in parallel without impacting the VS performance as much. So we're making some changes there. All right, that's kind of, should be transparent to you. Stuff that I demoed, code style things, right? We have options for naming styles, whether to qualify, everyone's favorite topic, should I use var or should I not use var? We have some options, and again, for how we generate code, and again, you can enforce it. You can make it so that your team must use var in every place where they possibly can, which is what I would go for. I'm a huge fan of var, but I know that not everybody is. I didn't actually mention it. I spent a bunch of time in Tools Options. One of the things that isn't in the build that I have right now, but we're working on, is making it so that I can persist all these style things in a .editor config file, check it into source control, and everyone on my team who opens that solution will have the same style options applied with the same enforcement level and everything like that. And editor config is kind of an open source standard that is already supported for Atom and VS Code and Sublime and I think Sublime, I'm not sure. But a bunch of other editors kind of already support this idea of .editor config. And so that's kind of where we're going for saving that stuff. Navigation, all the F12s. And then go to with Control T. Those are kind of the things that I showed. Refactoring. I didn't actually get through all of these. I didn't do some of the introduce local and inline temp and some of these. They're all kind of available with Control Dot. So the takeaway, like I said before, is if you think the IDE should be able to help you with something, hit Control Dot and see if it can. Make a selection and hit Control Dot and see if the IDE can help you. Because chances are, we might be able to. We may, not always, but we might be able to. And we're going to work on adding to this list all the time. We've actually added some of these in every update to VS 2015, and we've added more in VS 15, and we plan to keep adding more in updates to VS 15 as well. Productivity, I showed you fuzzy matching, add references, add NuGet packages, completion filtering, and switch cases. I didn't show you target typing. Target typing is just when you start typing, the IDE should automatically pick the right thing for you more of the time. So you don't have to look around in the list or anything like that. We'll just know based on the type of the thing. So based on the type that's expected there by the language, will automatically kind of choose to go to things that are of that type in the list to make you a little bit more productive. I didn't show you indent guides explicitly. You might have seen them. Yeah, VS restarted. It crashed. Let's turn that option off. I didn't show you indent guides, but maybe you saw them. This is a common feature that people get from extensions, and so we just decided that maybe it was time to bring it into the editor. But if I open a file, I get these little dotted lines along the left-hand side. Maybe they're too small to see on that screen. But they just kind of line up where my braces are, so I can see what lines up with what. And if I hover over them, it'll tell me what is actually inside of that thing. We're looking at shrinking this display and having this come up on a little bit of a delay so that it's not quite as flashy as I move my mouse around. But that's just kind of a handy little thing. So that's indent guides. I showed you everything else. That's all. Yeah.